Hello, and welcome to episode 2 of the Design Block Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Hansen. Hello, friends. Now, before we jump into the episode, this one's kind of a short one, and it's a little bit of could be a deep topic. So if you want more about it, let me know. Today, we're going to talk about principles for UX design and laws around UX design. I only go over a few of them, just as kind of teasers. And just so you know, within the show notes or on my website, you'll be able to find links to some resources. I talk about a list of resources that I've given to my direct reports on this that'll be available too. All right, just wanted to make sure that was clear before we jumped in. And now let's jump into the episode. Thanks. Historically, I've kept my career or work and social media completely separate. Work was for work, social media was for fun and other things, and never shall the two meet. But I've started to change kind of that idea. So as I've started to think about bringing kind of my perspective or my advice on design to social media, I've been kind of looking at what other people are doing. And I've noticed that the content is mostly on the how-to pieces of like tools and things like that. So like how to do X in Figma, or how to do this other thing in Webflow or Framer or whichever tool. And finding content actually talking about the process and work of design decisions and doing all that stuff has like been hard to find. We're just getting, you know, information about the tools to document those design decisions. I think maybe that's because like the short form video and short form of social media in general is probably better suited for those quick soundbite or screen capture how-tos. Like that just kind of makes sense. And don't get me wrong, the tools today totally deserve tutorials, and they're so much better than what I started. But in the end, all these tools accomplish the same goal, whether it's Photoshop, Illustrator, ImageReady, Fireworks, Freehand, Sketch, or finally today, Figma. While today's tools are wildly more efficient and let you get to an end result so much faster than the previous generations of tools, just knowing those tools doesn't make you a designer. As I've gone through my career managing and mentoring designers, I've had just about every new designer ask about how to design. But that doesn't mean how to use a tool. New designers want to understand why some visual hierarchy feels better than others. How other designers have utilized color or spacing so well. They've wondered how some products or websites seem to lead your eye and mouse right where it should go to complete a task or achieve a goal. And they've asked why some tools just seem to work while others are cumbersome or error prone. And none of the answers there are being good at Figma. Now, interestingly enough, even Jacob Nielsen has recently put out an article on the Gestalt principles of visual UI design. That was actually kind of the prompt for me to start recording or thinking about this episode. What it reminded me of is that I've been asked these questions so many times by the designers that I've worked with, is that I'd already kind of put together a list of resources that I would give direct reports when they would ask these kinds of questions. And I'll link that resource in the show notes. So what are these principles and what makes them even principles? A principle, and I'm using air quotes you can't see, is defined by a fundamental truth or proposition that serves as a foundation for a system of belief or behavior or for a chain of reasoning. So that means there are these things that are considered foundational to things like visual design, visual communication, and interaction design. If we break these into two groups, I think we can call one group principles and we'll call the other group laws. For the visual aspects, we'll go with principles like the Gestalt principles. I think for interaction design and kind of driving desired behavior or responses, we'll go with laws. I'm going to list off a few examples of each to kind of get you started, but I definitely recommend doing your own research. Again, I'll put links into some of these resources I've given direct reports over time. But definitely spend some time digging into this on your own. After you have these principles kind of in your back pocket, then you'll be able to use any tool you want effectively for design. So let's jump into just a few examples. There are more of these principles that I'm going to talk about here, but let's just jump into three examples. So the first example of Gestalt principles that I want to talk about is common regions. Common regions are elements that are perceived as part of a group if they are located within the same closed regions. So if you think about different elements on the page that are maybe constrained by a bounding box, or maybe they're even constrained by the same background in a card, these items are going to be perceived as a group. Kind of a simple one, but it's a powerful one, like a lot of these are, actually. The next principle that I want to talk about is actually even kind of related, maybe, is proximity. So the principle of proximity states that objects that are closer together are perceived as more related than objects that are further apart. Now, again, this may seem simplistic, but I've seen a ton of applications out there that have different controls for different things that are spread wildly apart, even though those controls like affect the same thing. So if you think about filtering a table or controls for search and filtering, proximity would be a principle that you want to pay attention to there, because if you're affecting the same data set, the tools to affect that same data set should be close together, and those tools should be in proximity of that data set. The third principle in our short list of examples here would be focal points. So the principle of focal points states, elements with a point of interest, emphasis, or difference will capture and hold the viewer's attention. So I think one of the most simplistic examples of this would be all of the hero images that we've seen, and the copy and the call to action within that generates that focal point, kind of leads the eye to the right information and the right action. So that could be an example of using focal points correctly. Okay, so that's just three quick examples of the principles. So now I want to pivot over and do three examples of different UX laws. And I'm going to start that off with Jacob's Law. And Jacob's Law specifies that users spend most of their time on other sites, and they prefer your site to work the same as other sites that they already know. So if you think about this and how it might be applied, however many people go to Amazon and check out through their shopping cart or go through their shopping, if you started to design a e-commerce site, stepping away from the patterns that Amazon has established might not be the best idea. Of course, creativity, testing, all of that, figure out what works for your customers. But for the most part, as you traverse around the web, you don't want to be surprised by how different things work. And that's kind of what Jacob's Law talks to. So the more sites that adhere to Jacob's Law, the more usable everything's going to feel. Okay, so this next law we've all heard a bunch of different times probably, but I still think it's worth mentioning. Fitt's Law. Fitt's Law is the time to acquire a target is the function of the distance to and the size of the target. So if you think about making controls for different parts of your app, if you make them smaller, you make them further away, they're going to be more difficult to find and use. So when you're thinking about different interaction designs around your app, paying attention to Fitt's Law is something that's important. Even in modern mobile design, where you're moving a bunch of the actions closer to the bottom of the window so your thumb can get to them, is an example of Fitt's Law being used. And the third and final kind of law example that I'll use is Hick's Law. And Hick's Law is important because as you're talking to all of the people that you're working with and trying to build a view or an application or whichever, they always want to kind of throw everything into it at once. So by applying Hick's Law, it's important to remember that the time it takes to make a decision increases with the number and complexity of the choices available. So from a design perspective, this is where, you know, we start talking about trying to limit choices in a meaningful way, not overload the user with all of the things that they could possibly do, starting to chunk choices down into different steps. All of those kinds of things are examples of Hick's Law being applied. All right, there we go. There are three of your Gestalt principles as examples and to start kind of learning from, and three separate UX laws as examples to start thinking about. Like I said, let this just kind of be the start of your dive into principles and laws for design. As we started talking about in the beginning of the episode, tools help us express, you know, what we're thinking. They're good. They document design decisions. and they help us express these principles and laws to our stakeholders, teams, and customers. And again, there's no doubt that the tools have gotten so much better after the past two decades, but tools can't carry you very far without this foundational knowledge and understanding. All right, don't forget to check out the show notes for links to these principles and more. I have a link to a UX Laws book from O'Reilly. Lots of great information there. And then I just want to say thanks. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe in your favorite podcast app. Give a rating. That would be super helpful. I would enjoy that. And share this out to your other design and product friends. All right, that's going to do it for today. I know it was kind of a short one, but until next episode, keep learning, keep making, and always be designing.